Hello and welcome to another episode of In the Margins. My name is Eli and here with me today is Alex. Alex is
hello.
The... Yes, hello. Oh,
sorry, I was still talking.
That's okay. Hey, maybe do you want to spice things up? Do you want to say your intro?
It's fine. You're the host. You please. Sorry I interrupted you.
No, we're keeping this. We're keeping this, yes. Okay. Where was I? Alex is the 2021-2022 co-president of the English Students Association and the winner of the 2020 Chris Heard Memorial Writing Prize. He's a fourth-year English major, double minor in cultural studies and medieval and medievalism studies. If you aren't impressed enough yet, he's also been a dungeon master in several D&D campaigns. So how's it going?
Things are going pretty well. I've read up on things so I can.
Yeah, you did.
So
your
I
homework.
Sound like. Yeah, I did. I did a little homework. Just a little. I've got a book beside me. You know, I watched a SpongeBob episode before showing up here. So you know, I am well prepared.
Okay. Yeah. What? So for context for people who are listening, Alex and my friend group have been referring to some SpongeBob episode, and then like saying it's cursed, I think, or something.
No, not quite.
Yeah, I have no context for it.
Yeah, no, it's a SpongeBob episode that, like, me personally, I will pop off about and just talk about how it's actually making an interesting point about the nature of art itself.
Is this the Squidward episode where he goes and lives with all the other Squidwards?
No, although that one's making a point about gated communities, probably. The episode Artist Unknown from season 2, I believe. It's an episode. Man, I didn't think we'd be getting into the SpongeBob episode this early.
You brought it up, so.
This is true.
You
this
brought
is
it up.
You
sealed your own fate.
Yeah, I did this.
Just
I'm
like,
sorry.
Just like before the recording, I wrote an intro for Alex, but then I forgot to put it in the questions document, which is where I read from. And Alex is like, oh, can you add this? And I was like, I can add everything, actually. Mm-hmm. But please do share your SpongeBob knowledge.
Yes, the SpongeBob discourse, of course.
Please.
Yeah.
Perfect, you rhyme, too.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So the season 2 episode, Artist Unknown, is about Squidward teaching art at the local community center, and SpongeBob is the only one that shows up. Am I loud enough, by the way?
Oh, yeah, you're good.
Okay, cool. And funnily enough, like, the episode is making an interesting point about how the artistic canon and, like, artistic traditions are actually holding back artistic expression, which is, like, surprisingly nuanced for a SpongeBob episode.
Yeah, that, like, is very nuanced.
Yeah, like, the whole point is that Squidward is the one that's, like, teaching how to do art, like, what proper art is. And, like, one quote literally from the episode is, like, you can't just do art willy-nilly. You have to... It takes a lot of hard work. You have to follow the rules of art in order to produce good art.
I feel like I've seen this episode.
I mean, it is one of the classics. I mean, of course, I'm making all three original seasons in the first movie count as classics. Yeah, I am not biased at all. Yeah, like... SpongeBob produces very intuitive art that doesn't take much time and is just him expressing himself in whatever medium he wants, like ripped up pieces of paper and origami. And Squidward doesn't consider that to be art because it didn't take a lot of effort. It's not in traditional mediums like marble, like one bit.
For a second, I thought you meant like marbles, like the things you roll on the floor.
No, like big blocks.
As we all know, traditional art was made with a bunch of rolling marbles.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that sounds like something SpongeBob would do in the episode, and then Squidward would be like, no, you gotta, look at the marble, SpongeBob. Like, you know.
That does remind me of, like, what art classes were like. Mm-hmm. Like, just the, you need to do it like this. I think there's some merit to that, but at this, like, learn the rules before you break them. But also,
yeah,
if you're not planning on being a big fancy artist, who cares?
Yeah, like I do think depending on what medium and what, like, career path you're wanting to go down, there definitely is merit in learning the rules mm-hmm. of the medium, because, like, depending on what you're going for, you're going to want to produce a certain style, and understanding what makes that style tick is really going to help you out for that medium in particular.
100%.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you don't care and you just kind of want to do what you want, then, you know, you shouldn't have the Squidwards of the world.
I don't think SpongeBob was aiming for a career in the fine arts. I'm just going to say that right now.
Yeah, which is, like, interestingly for the episode, Squidward and others around him consider art to be successful if it is, like, monetarily successful, mm-hmm. if it's, like, accepted in a museum, or if it makes you lots of money. That, to, like, Squidward and to an art critic, or, like, the owner of an art museum, that's the metric by which they measure how good art is. But you could tell that, yeah.
I was just going to say, that's an interesting comment on, I think, a lot of things. Like, a lot of people don't put value into things just for the sake of doing them. They do it based on the monetary value, like, right? Like, writing.
NFTs
or...
be like.
Well, just
the monkey has approached.
If you think about all the people that discourage people from doing art, it's usually because there's not a lot of money into it. Or discourage people from doing their hobbies because you can't monetize it. But not mm-hmm. everything has to be for money.
Yeah, like, I've had a guy...
that might be a problem.
I was working a tutoring position once, and, like, the guy that... one of the guys that owned it, we were talking, he said that, like, you should... like, your hobby should be something that you can monetize and make into a job. And I don't really agree with that, because I think, like, you know, if you're pursuing something artistic, the pursuit is in the art itself rather than the gains that the art will get you. And I feel like a lot of people society-wide have replaced artistic value in and of itself with the price tag attached to the piece.
Mm. Yeah, like, people aren't doing art just for the sake of doing art. It's to make money a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, like, I think that might be because I don't know if I would want to be, like, a famous artist in X category or artist in Y category. Like, I don't know. I feel like I might have to make too many concessions in order to make what I produce a marketable product.
Oh, I get what you mean.
And, like, I don't know how I feel about that.
I actually talked to someone else about that. A person called John. He was in the first episode of the season, I believe. And we were talking about that, how he doesn't really want to be completely famous because, or even, like, hugely famous, just because you have to give up a lot of things to make other people like your art, depending on what type of art you're doing and how you're getting published, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, like, I feel like those concessions would really get in the way of the kinds of things that I might want to produce. Now, hey, if I luck out, maybe the stuff that I want to produce people really enjoy and I don't have to change anything. But, you know, if I would have to change stuff, then I don't know.
I'm curious. What are the things you think you'll have to get rid of, if you don't mind me asking?
Like, that's, like, I don't know. I think that's hard to predict. Mm. And, like, off the top of my head, like, I don't think you can ever really predict what is going to be marketable and what isn't.
I can, for the things I write.
Oh boy!
I have lots of things people will be angry about.
Hmm. Well, hey, at least you can find your niche.
But exactly.
I mean, hey, then you need to kind of balance between writing for a really small audience of people that really enjoy your stuff, and then making things broadly marketable. And then that's when you start having to think about the market and what the market would want. And like, I don't know if I really like that.
Mm-hmm. You send in things for like magazines and stuff, right?
For my writing, that's like predominantly what I've been doing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't know if I really have it in me at this point to sit down and write a whole novel. So writing some decent-ish length short stories is enough for me at this point.
Writing novels is so much. But I wanted to know, why did you want to submit your work?
That's a good question. I feel like it's just something that I wanted to try out. Like,
Am I giving you a crisis?
No. Like, it's funny. I don't know if I've ever really sat down and been like, okay, why do I want to publish? And I don't know, I think after you mentioned that the Chris Hurd Memorial Writing Prize, I think after that, I was like, there are people out there that seemingly like my stuff. Let's keep going and see where this ends up. So I think I was just content in the fact that there's a possibility that, you know, some people could get joy out of reading my stuff. And I think that's really enough for me. You know, I'm not expecting fame or fortune or anything.
Oh, it's come on, Alex. You gotta aim. You gotta aim for the stars.
I mean, hey, okay, to be fair, I have submitted to, like, the top publications in like, sci-fi and fantasy, because that's primarily where I publish in. And hey, I did start with those. And then when I got the rejection letters for those, now I'm starting to work my way down, so...
I love that you're like, I'm gonna go for the highest I can reach and then work my way down.
It's been working for, maybe saying working is a bit of a stretch because I haven't been published once, but however, it's the process that I'm using and I'm liking it.
Yeah. I'm really impressed. I've seen things online that say, basically, the whole point is to get rejected like 100 times and then you'll get one acceptance. So
that's true, yeah.
The more you send it out, the more you get better at doing pitches and refining your work, the higher chance that you will get published.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it's all a numbers game, really. Like, anything in the arts, and I guess anything just in general, like, wanting to be successful isn't really a goal that you can have, because you yourself can't control whether you become successful or not. The only thing you can do is put yourself out there and roll the dice, and then hopefully luck will be like, yeah, okay, you can be successful now.
It's kind of funny that you say that, because you're right. You can't really go into a career in the arts and be like, yep, I'm gonna go be famous, I'm gonna have a regular income. You can't. You're not going to, probably. I mean, you might, but you'd be lucky in that case.
Yeah, like, unless you do art within a company, like, if you want to be a concept artist or something like that, then you are being paid a salaried position for your art. But yeah, if you want to do, like, freelance stuff and want to be, like, world famous and stuff, that's not really a goal. You can't sit down right in on your whiteboard, be famous.
That's
not
how
that works.
You don't know that.
You don't know my life.
You don't know my life, Alex.
All right, well, you can do that. And then in addition to that, you can realize that the only thing you really have control over is your actions.
Screw you, Alex. I'm going to be famous by just sitting here.
Yeah.
but I agree. I have people who I know who are freelance artists, and a lot of it comes down to dedication, so like the amount of time that you're putting into your work, and just luck. That's it.
Oh yeah, and like the dedication offsets the amount of luck that you need, because like Yeah, like, you should never rely on the luck. Don't rely on the luck. Just, like, one bit of advice that I've heard is that, like, statistically speaking, luck plays way more into success than a lot of your own actions, but you'll lead a more, like,
fulfilling
feeling in yourself if the entire time you believe that you are in control of it all. Because, like, you're kind of, like, tricking your brain into believing that you have control over it, even though in the end it's mostly luck.
Well, I mean, if you just kind of wait your entire life just sitting there, you're still not going to get the results you want. You have a better chance of getting lucky if you go out and try, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, simply by putting yourself out there, you're, in a sense, kind of stacking the deck such that, like, you're going to draw the good cards more often, perhaps.
Yeah.
And that's the best we can do.
Because, like, if you're writing, no one's going to... Okay, someone might, if you're, like, one of the off chance, like, Taylor Swift, my friend submitted my stuff to a radio station person, you might get noticed. But that is probably way less than the likelihood of you getting killed by a shark in the middle of New York City.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, those New York sharks are really deadly this time of year.
Yeah, they are. But if you're submitting stuff, you have a much higher chance that, hey, you'll get noticed. People will start remembering your name eventually, probably, depending on how many you send. But how many you send, if they liked your work, and if you send to enough places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but even then, there is no guarantee at all that you could write your entire life and write book after book after book and submit all the time and die in obscurity.
That is depressing. Holy crap.
I mean, hey, look, there are plenty of authors, poets out there, and painters, and people in every medium imaginable who were never famous until after they were dead.
Thanks, Alex.
So that, I mean, hey, that's why
it is true, though.
In many of the mediums that I've participated in, they beat you over the head to fall in love with the process.
Yes.
To take solace in the progress that you yourself are making, and don't even think about where you're wanting to go, because you, for all you know, you're going to be the one who croaks with no one having ever known your name. And that's just the reality of what we're doing here.
Mm-hmm. I think I would agree and disagree with that advice. I don't think it's wrong to think or hope that eventually you'll be noticed, or that people, even just a couple of people, will like your work. But yeah, I agree. You shouldn't bank on being famous.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I will say publishing is a lot easier nowadays than it used to be.
Oh yeah, 100%.
And now you don't need to pay, like, however much and get the king to be like, yeah, I approve this book.
Yes, good. Yes, peasant. Delightful book.
Exactly.
Money. I that's my aristocratic voice.
It's beautiful. Thank you.
You are welcome. You are welcome, yes.
You have a beautiful... Maybe you should be a voice actor instead.
Well, I have done voices for my D&D games, segue. Yes. So,
speaking of, do you want to talk about D&D?
Sure, because D&D is quite literally the reason that I started writing in the first place. So.
Oh, do tell. Do tell.
Yeah.
Story time.
Yeah, like, literally the reason that I even considered writing as a thing is because I started doing characters and settings for D&D.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, like, near the end of high school, I got into D&D. Like, I was in the fifth year. I took a fifth year, and most of my friends, which I would recommend, I don't know if there are any high school students listening to this Laurier podcast.
Maybe
if
my
there
cousin.
Are, hey, Eli's cousin.
I have one cousin who maybe listens to this whenever, like, on and off. I have no idea if she's ever listened to it or not.
Okay.
Her name's
Eli's cousin. if you have the means, maybe possibly take the fifth year, because it'll make you realize that you should take English instead of applied water science, like me.
I'm pretty sure she hates English.
Well, then it'll be the other way around.
She doesn't. No, but, I'm pretty sure she doesn't like applied water sciences. She wants to be an interior designer.
That's cool.
Yeah, she's much more coordinated than I am in terms of everything.
All right, so I was in high school and I started playing D&D because my regular friend group had ditched and I needed something to do, so I found people to play D&D with. And, you know, I wanted to create good characters, so I looked up a bunch of advice on how to create well-rounded characters. And no joke, some of my first really decent writing advice came from YouTube videos telling you how to make a very three-dimensional D&D character.
Oh, nice!
Yeah, and it teaches you to take into account a character's flaws to make sure that, like, a level one character doesn't have 40 years of dragon smiting combat experience. You know, it makes you consider how to create well-rounded settings, how to create well-rounded villains. And through that whole process, I created my homebrew setting, which I still use to this very day. I came up with characters that I still use to this very day. And like that was my first step into a larger world, so to say.
Wow. I remember the first one that I started through writing fan fiction. And I remember one of the first thing that stuck with me was that... Did you just go fan fiction?
I was like, oh, fan fiction.
Oh, okay, you were mocking me.
No. Like, I respect to the people that write insanely long fan fiction that's longer than Lord of the Rings, you know?
Yeah, those people.
Sorry for interrupting.
Oh, no. It's all good. I was just going to say, the one thing that stuck with me was the one advice that I saw that said, whatever your character's best traits are also their worst traits. Mm-hmm. That's something that always... Yeah, because if you think about it, some of your best traits as a human being are probably also your flaws. Like, for example, if you're really... Like, you're able to power through everything, you can focus really hard on things... Maybe you don't take care of yourself well, or you're really stubborn and can't apologize, or I don't know, things like that, or you might not remember to focus on things that are important.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I think like approaching characters from that mindset really prevents you from having the crazy overpowered character who has really awesome, amazing qualities, and then their flaws are pretty negligible.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think having the flaws be the strengths, I think that adds a touch of realism.
Yeah, that's what I really liked about that piece, because I think, because if you think about it, like, what do you consider to be your worst trait? I was going to say best trait, but then it felt like it would be mean to take your best trait and be like, well, actually.
Actually, you suck. Ooh, worst trait. Man, we're going deep in this podcast.
Well, you don't have to actually give me your worst trait. You just give me a trait that you don't like about yourself that's, like, not too deep.
Okay. Like, I'm a pretty big procrastinator. It's bad.
Oh, but on the same hand, that could help you if the teacher, for example, let's say, gives new information about a project. Or, maybe, you might realize partway through that people have been doing the project wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like, you haven't started, so you can see from their mistakes.
Like, technically speaking, depending on how you spin it, procrastination is actually efficiency. Because if you manage to get everything done,
yeah,
technically you got it done in a really short period of time, and if the quality doesn't suffer, then you just found a really efficient way to get things done and be able to do other stuff you actually want to do.
While worrying about it.
I know. It was actually a good trait all along.
Yeah, but
big
like...
brain.
But you could flip anything like that. Maybe someone who is really passionate about their dream or their job or whatever. At the same time, they're probably neglecting other things. Let's say they have a family or friends, and they don't see them anymore because they're so passionate about their job that they forget about everything else.
Literally a talking point in my existentialism class.
Oh, really?
No joke. Like what you said right there. Simone de Beauvoir's hierarchy of people. Like, oh. She had an idea about, like, existentially speaking, there's a hierarchy.
Am I a philosopher now?
You are. You're a philosopher, and oh, you didn't even know it. And it basically starts at the bottom with people that are, you know, they don't believe life has any value, and then it goes right up to the very top about people who live their life really true to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And near the top, but not quite at the top, is the passionate man. And the passionate man is like an artist who wants to live their most authentic life. So they really throw themselves into a certain artistic pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're not living their life by the dictates of other people. They're living their life based entirely about how they want to live it. And, you know, that sounds really good, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
However, she says that can also be a negative, because the passionate man can become so passionate in their one single-minded pursuit that they're no longer able to relate to other people. They basically become the artist that's like, oh, no one understands my work.
You know what's You know what's funny about that? I could almost see it also as being kind of a comment on autism, in a sense, of people who hyper-focus, and then they, because they didn't learn the social skills, they just kind of, that's all they can relate to.
Hmm.
Just kind of a side comment. Like,
yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a practical application of this kind of theoretical framework.
Yeah, anyone who hyper-focuses, you may be the man.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the passionate man. And like a lot of de Beauvoir's hierarchy, like the higher points sound pretty good, because, you know, it's like living your own life for your own values, but then it kind of falls apart when you're only thinking about your own values and you're not taking into account other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it all falls apart. And then at the very tippy top, where everything is good, you are living your own values, but also realizing that to live the freest life is to also allow the freedom of other people.
Mm-hmm.
That right there. Yes, and their values, making sure that you're not stepping on other people in order to live your own most fulfilling life. That right there is the highest that the hierarchy can be.
Wow, I didn't know I was a philosopher.
You are.
I feel so smart. Thank you for coming on and teaching me how to be smart.
You're welcome. That's what I'm here to do, to make you feel smart.
That's the real reason I invited you here. I was like, you know what? All these other people have
Who can boost my ego today?
Who can boost my ego? I want to know. We were joking beforehand because I didn't put the intro in. I was just like, yeah, I just pulled this guy off the street. We don't know who he is. I'm just pulling him in. He's just boosting my ego.
Hello, random citizen.
Hello, random citizen. So we talked about creating and making things, but I want to know, you also spoke about having a D&D group. So what was that experience like? And what was it like interacting between the worlds of writing and D&D? And you also do music.
I've started doing music.
You started doing music. Okay.
You're a baby. I'm a small baby child music man. Put that on a t-shirt.
Say that as quote.
Yeah.
I'm gonna clip that.
Please do. So wait, are we including the music in the D&D, or are we just talking about D&D?
Whatever you'd like. I'm just curious, like, about your social interactions in creative worlds.
For socially speaking, it's been great. And I think writing wise, I definitely wouldn't have done the things that I've done with my writing if it weren't for the Creative Writing Society at Laurier. Like a million percent, not sponsored at all.
Not sponsored at all.
I am not sponsored when I say that the only reason I won the Chris Hurd Memorial Writing Prize is because I was in the writing club.
Yeah, not sponsored. LCWS Laurier, find us on Instagram. Yeah.
I sound like I'm being facetious, but I'm not. Like,
no, I didn't. Well, if technically, I guess you are, because I'm the co-president of LCWS, so technically, I guess.
Shh, they mustn't know.
No one needs to know.
The secret must not be revealed.
Oh, sorry.
But no joke. Like, the community surrounding, like, Laurier and writing has been incredibly helpful for helping me just kind of get my writing on the right track. And it's been really great to help generate new ideas. Because, mm-hmm. you know, you're... like one bit of advice that I've heard when I was getting into drawing that can apply to basically every other artistic pursuit is to surround yourself with people who are better
yes. at
the medium than you are, because you'll just absorb information like a sponge.
Yes.
And that is so true. Like, with my writing, the quality of my work basically ascended into the stratosphere after I started, like going to the club. And also, I took a creative writing class, which is actually where I learned about the club. So,
The first year reps really are worth it.
Yeah, they are.
They are.
They are 1,000,000,000% worth it.
Shout out to Jen. She's great. First year rep.
You're doing great, Jen. But yeah, find that community. Because I don't know. I can't imagine being the artist in solitude would be much fun. Like,
no.
that doesn't sound like a chill time. You know, just get the gang together, bounce some ideas off them, get a second opinion, because you don't want to be that artist who's like, no one gets me.
No,
like,
one understands me and my genius.
My tragedy. Like, come on, bro. Like, come on, talk to other people. You'll get some good ideas.
Yeah, I think honestly the best way to get ideas if you're stuck, like I did this to you, Alex. I was like, hey, Alex, I'm telling you my story. Mm-hmm. Give me ideas.
And I'm like spirit streamer.
Yes. I'm actually keeping that. So I'll give you a shout out if that
like,
ever gets
like, no, like, I'm actually pretty proud of that idea.
Yeah, that was cool. That's mm-hmm. For context, I have a story where this person has super Twitch powers, essentially. But I couldn't figure out why she got them. And we went, oh, it's a spirit camera. Or Alex mm-hmm. went like that. And Alex is smart. And that's why I invite him on shows.
Mm-hmm.
See, it benefits me. That's the only reason we're friends.
I'm just thinking back to that SpongeBob episode. Like, and maybe some of my talent will rub off on you.
Yeah, I'm just basking in the glow of the all-powerful Alex. I mean, just about to say, you are the co-president of the ESA. What do you guys do there?
We have entered sponsored territory.
No, we were talking about this in the executive chat, and nobody really knew what you, like, what do you do? You just, like, read books?
Ah, yes, the English person. No, okay, so the ESA is essentially a means by which the English community can kind of find themselves, and we like, and we
commercial.
Like, I mean, at this point, I have entered pitch mode. Like, what we do, we put on a variety of events throughout the year to basically get all of the English majors, all three of us, all together in one place. I joke, but there are so few English majors.
Really, I thought there'd be a lot.
There are barely any. Like, most of us...
I can understand you, because there are 10 total Spanish majors, and I think 50 total language majors.
Baller. Like, that's how I feel sometimes.
Like, no, like, literally, I'm not joking, those are the actual numbers.
I know, like, that's how I metaphorically feel, And I bet there's way more of us, but like, wow, 10 Spanish majors, that's whack.
Yeah, it's because they took away the possibility of using it as a teachable for teachers college, which is really annoying, because now I can only have one teachable.
Rip.
Thank you.
That's unfortunate. Sorry. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Go ahead.
but yeah, okay, so not a lot of English majors. Like, I headed a club fair, and I stood for like four hours straight.
Yes, we came to annoy you.
I was very tired by the end. But everyone that I spoke to, long story short, there's barely any English students. So what the ESA does is we put on usually we aim for monthly events to bring the English majors together and just help them out, because the low number of English students means that it's sometimes hard to get advice on your major. You can't just walk up to the 9,000th BBA student and
they're everywhere.
I know, right?
Is it just me, or are they in like every freaking class, like every single language class? I'm like, oh, what are you? BBA, BBA, BBA. Why are you here?
That was me during the club fair. I'm like, hey, do you like books? And they're like, no, I'm a BBA student.
If
I'm like,
they're not BBA, they were there for the computer science. Yeah.
Yeah. It's BBA or computer science. And I swear, the computer science students would look at me and they're like, I will never write an essay in my life. And I'm like,
yeah, their eyes are like dead. You look at them and they're like, what the fuck are words?
Yeah. The ESA, we put on events. We put on events that the computer science students seem to not like. And in my soul, I'm like, okay, literature has more applications than school. It applies to literally everywhere in life, but that's besides the point. Academically speaking, we put on events to help you out academically. Like my favorite event, my favorite ESA event, again, very sponsored, is the Meet the Professors event. So what I love Meet the Professors because it is probably one of the best ways that I can think of that you can engage with the faculty outside of classes. Because, you know, it can be kind of awkward, kind of like shuffling into office hours and be like, hi, Dr. Austin, can we talk about...
Or when you're like, Zoom calls are the worst now with office hours? Because then it's like if you like went into their house and was like, hey, can you help me with my essay? Yeah.
Dr. Weiss, I am in your living room. Like, so yeah, like it is... Like, the Meet the Profs is a very casual environment where you can just kind of chat with your professors. And also, if you show up to that event, that's basically El Primo Premium, like, connection.
Networking?
Yeah, like networking, premium S-tier networking. Like, it's crazy.
Yes.
Like, I went to Meet the Professors, and then I became an ESA exec, and then I became the co-pres. So, like... It also shows the professors that like you've got enough ambition to like go to faculty events.
Mm-hmm. Can recommend, because I also did it for the languages program. Mm-hmm. Teachers, or I guess professors, will be I don't know, they're a lot friendlier because then they know you, and if you always have your camera on during class, which is what I do, or like I answer, if you answer one question in the class and
they
you have your camera turned on, it's like the instant, like, you're the best student, and it's so how low the bar is.
It really is. Like, it saddens my soul, the number of blank Zoom voids I have to look at. And it's like me and three other people and the professor, and we're vibing. And then 98% of the class has just been claimed by the nothing. Like,
sometimes I'm the only one, and it's like, guys, please.
Guys, come on.
Or my poor TA Spanish class, almost everyone, I think, takes Spanish just for like an extra credit for quote unquote easy course.
That's right.
And my poor TA first year, I was the only one that answered. There were a couple people who would answer.
That's
but like, it'd be
up.
Like, okay, what's the answer to this? And it would just be dead silent. And if you picked people, people wouldn't even answer.
Oof. Ooh. It was rough. Like, okay, I don't think I've ever had a class that's that bad. Like, I have had a class where like we're put into breakout rooms and like maybe one or two people are just like silent void people.
Yes.
But I can't say I've ever had a a TA session where I was the only living human being in the call. Like, that's impressive.
Have you had the ones where you're put into breakout room and then they don't say anything in the entire time, and then you get back to the main room and they take your answer? And I'm just like,
yep.
Oh, that makes me so mad.
Oh, and they steal your answer. Oh,
yeah!
Ooh, that's rough. I can't say that's ever happened to me.
What's,
I'm sorry.
That what's happening in language classes? That's not happening anywhere else.
Oh, that is cold. Whew.
Yeah, I had that happen to me several times, and it was like, dude, I asked you so many times, I would have helped you, and you steal my goddamn answer?
Ooh, that is messed up. That's
I like how we're acting as if it's like a cold-blooded murder.
But it's cold-blooded academic murder, and
yeah,
I don't like that personally.
Yeah, me either, to be honest.
As the co-president of the ESA, I don't condone that.
Thank you. As we're like adjacent to each other. You're in English, I'm in languages, just not English.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like adjacent to each other.
Yeah. See, we respect the academic hustle.
We do. We're both teacher's pets.
yeah, I am. I sit right in the front row and raise my hand, and I bet all the people that sit in the back row think I'm a nerd, and I'm like, yeah.
I don't know why people get so pissy about it. There are benefits to, you learn better, you get to know your professors, you network, people have a better opinion of you. Like, no, well, the
but anti-intellectualism is hip these days.
Oh.
Like, man. I would actually be very interested to read up on the psychology of anti-intellectualism. Like,
yeah.
That would be very interesting. Because, like, I've done a lot of reading on the nature of, like, conspiracy theories, but I don't know if, mm-hmm. like, conspiracy theories and anti-intellectualism are the same thing.
I don't know. I think they kind it of, depends like, cross on into, the theory.
Yeah, I think they kind of cross into each other.
It's like a Venn diagram.
Yeah, yeah. A very stupid Venn diagram.
I saw on YouTube this guy who makes his living, I think, talking about conspiracy theories. And part of me, just watching some of the conspiracy theories.
Was it like Wendigo?
I have no idea.
Like, he's like the conspiracy theory iceberg, and his videos are like 3 hours long, and he talks about like conspiracy.
I can already tell he's great because he's using an indigenous creature that is not supposed to be spoken of at all.
I don't know. Like, I mean, I actually quite like his content because he doesn't like actually unironically believe in these conspiracy theories. Mm-hmm. He's like, hey guys, let's have a look at some of the wacky stuff people believe, and then he like goes down the list. So like,
oh yeah, that's fine. I was thinking about the guy who was like unironically creating them, and then part of me was like, what if I made my career that? What if I just made up conspiracy theories
and got paid for it?
Yeah, how much would I like influence the world? Obviously, I wouldn't, like, make any harmful ones. It would just be, like, I think the cheese is actually made by chickens. Or something like that. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't think playing with conspiracy theories of any caliber is cool.
Yeah, probably.
Because, like, it's just, like, the distortion of truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, come on. We don't need any more of that.
Oh man, but don't you believe Pokemon exists in real life and they were dinosaurs?
I mean, that's a pretty interesting theory. I like, okay, to be honest, like if Ash in the middle of a match just summoned a T-Rex, then like, okay, here's your badge,
I mean,
get out of here.
He basically does. If you know Kranidos.
I don't. Oh, I'm not up on my Pokemon. I'm sorry.
Oh my god, Alex, you bring up Pokemon and you don't even know it?
I wasn't a Nintendo kid growing up.
Oh my god, what did you do?
Like, I owned a GameCube, but I have a feeling that, like, my parents weren't able to buy, like, the premium,
mm-hmm.
the named Nintendo titles, because probably they were already bought out, so I got all the secondary stuff. And they were all bangers, all of them. Like Super Monkey Ball, SpongeBob Battle for Bikini Bottom, Lego Star Wars.
Oh, I did play those less too.
Like, oh, ooh.
Lego
but,
Star
yeah.
Wars is great.
Yeah, like I didn't play like Legend of Zelda Wind Waker until like I was in like the middle of high school.
Oh wow.
I can't really do Zelda games. I'm sorry.
How dare
I've
you?
I really tried.
It's okay. I don't hold it against you.
Yeah, like I own a Nintendo 64. I've tried Ocarina of Time. I couldn't do it. Like, I really couldn't. It gave me a headache.
Was it the game style that gave you a headache, or what?
No, like the graphics literally gave me a headache.
Oh no.
It was real, but like even the other ones, like the exploration really didn't do it for me.
Mm.
Like, I guess if we're talking about games now,
yeah.
If I can't grind for hundreds of pointless hours in a game, to get that item that's got like a 2% drop rate, then what's even the point?
Oh my god, I hate this. See, this is where we divide here.
Yeah. Those
games drive me fucking nuts. I hate grinding. I want to be able to move through the story without doing any of that.
Yeah. I guess those kind, like, I seem to really enjoy those. Like, let me pull up my Steam charts to kind of inform you on the kinds of games.
Oh, you know what? You'd probably like My Time at Portia.
Can I even filter by playtime? It would probably be really sad.
Are you sure you want to know that?
Oh, I might as well.
I try not to look at mine.
Yeah.
All right. See how much of my life I've spent on it.
Yeah, so I guess we're going to quick pause here until I find out how to sort like that. Like, I've done that in the past. Okay, whatever. Like, Skyrim, I've got 127 hours in it. Warframe, I've got 1,391 hours. Okay, yeah, 1,391 hours.
Oh my god!
Yeah. Okay.
How much of your life is that?
Yes.
1,000, what'd you say?
1,391.
391 divided by, let's say, 24 hours. You have spent 58 days. So almost 2 months of your life on that game.
165 hours in Terraria.
Oh my god.
Where's Path of Exile? That's
another, you're just ignoring this, huh?
That's another spicy meatball right there.
I don't know if you want your parents to listen to that.
779 hours in Path of Exile.
Oh, hey, you and my dad would get along.
Why, does your dad play Path of Exile?
Yeah, he loves it.
Yeah!
You also look a lot like my dad, which is very funny.
Oh. Huh, okay.
Fun fact,
I look like your dad, ?
Yeah, you look like a younger version of him.
Huh, okay. 90 hours in Monster Hunter World. 89 or 90 hours in Halo the Master Chief Collection. 66 hours in Halo Infinite, which only came out like a month ago. So
nice.
So yeah, I need help. Too many game.
Too many game.
Mm-hmm.
That is so.
Although many game. I am trying to replace playing mindless hours of video games with other stuff. So yeah, that's like the music. I'm playing music now. My little tiny baby music man music now.
Yeah. I don't think there's necessarily anything inherently bad about spending a lot of time on video games as long as it's not like the only thing you're doing.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, hey, if you're having an absolute blast playing lots of video games, then I mean, hey, cool. But I don't know. I feel like I could spread my wings and be doing other stuff. So
yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
To each their own.
Yee.
Let's see. What haven't we talked about yet?
Like visual art. We haven't talked about that yet.
Oh, that's true.
So how's
that going?
I have many tabs. Okay, like the thing is, I really haven't done a lot of drawing lately, which is a shame because I was getting pretty good.
Oh no.
Yeah, like I was getting pretty decent, and then I kind of stopped, and probably I have, like, my ability to draw has probably devolved
down,
quite a bit
yeah.
from where it was, and
rest in peace, as I know that pain.
Yeah, so it's probably going to take a bit for me to get back to where I was.
I'm actually drawing right now as I talk to you.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pokemon. But what kind of art do you like to do?
The art that I really enjoyed was like aiming more towards realism.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really getting into portraiture. So like doing portraits.
Okay. Who did you do portraits of?
I would just grab
a pictures off the street.
I would like kind of like what you did when you grabbed me off the street.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I would find just pictures online, and I try to find black and white pictures with really well-defined, like really well-defined values. So like a light and shadow, because like color has the potential to mess you up if you don't have a really good handle on your light and dark values.
Yeah.
Like it's actually like a big piece of advice early on. Don't even think about color. Just draw in black and white. Or like,
they also like it when you turn the photo upside down and use a grid.
I don't use a grid. I have heard that for using shame. A grid is pretty good for like I use like sight measurements.
Oh, I see.
So I kind of like pick a bunch of well-defined landmarks on the face, and I draw those out first, and then I kind of extrapolate where all the other features are around those.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's actually a really decent way of kind of getting a handle on the structure of the face without having to rely on a grid. Because like a grid is fine, but there are instances where
in real life you can't use a grid.
Yeah, you know, if you're doing like life drawing, you can't.
Have you ever done life drawing?
Well, I kind of really got into art in the middle of the pandemic, so no.
Oh no.
Yeah. But I guess technically speaking, me looking at pictures and drawing from them were
is drawing example. From life technically.
Yeah, it's like I'm using a life reference, but also no. It's recommend it's like a picture is not able to capture the nuances of light and form and an object's three-dimensionality in the way that actually being in front of it can.
I'm gonna guess then you never learned like the pencil technique.
What's the pencil technique?
You know the thing that they always like when people are pretending to be artists where they hold up the pencil and
that's like a measurement technique.
Yeah, it is. I learned it in high school. I took I was part of the Drawing from Life club. Ooh. And we would have people pose in the center and the art teacher would show us how to do it. So basically you just take your thumb and you find the size of the person's head and mark it. And then from that you can use it because each person's body is roughly the same amount of heads long.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like 8.5, I think.
Yeah, and it obviously
unless you're an anime character, in which case who knows, man.
you could be one head if you're an anime character. Who knows?
Yeah, when I was just drawing off of computer reference, I wasn't drawing one to one. So technically, I was kind of doing like that sort of measurement. But yeah, like I never really. Actually, that's not true. I did one still life. I've done a singular still life this entire time.
Oh,
and
my
it was
God.
It was of my kitchen, and I did it in gouache paints, which are opaque watercolors.
Oh.
So like watercolor, most watercolor is usually like translucent, and you start with the darkest colors and you work up to the lightest colors, because I mean with watercolor you can't put down like a white highlight.
No.
Because they don't make white watercolor, that's not how that works. Gouache paint.
Wait, watercolor is just water.
Yes, watercolor. Water is water, confirmed. The floor is made of floor. Gouache paint it has opacity to it. So if you thin it down, then it's like watercolor. But if you apply it on really thick, like with like three C's, thick. Then you're able to paint over top of other layers. And like that can be really helpful, and you can put water on them and then blend between two different colors.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
paint like that.
Yeah, gouache paint is actually really, really good for training yourself on how to paint in oils. Because oil paint works in kind of the same way. In like one of the problems with gouache that I was having a lot of problems with is that, okay, you put some paint down, but if you paint over top of that paint with like too much pressure, then everything will get kind of blended together and it'll look like a brown, gross mess.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of need to paint in like blocks. You put like a block of paint here, a different block of a different color right beside it, and then you kind of blend in between instead of like trying to slop all the paint all over the place all the time. And gouache kind of teaches you that process of painting shapes, like painting a shadow shape over here and then a mid-tone right beside it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's definitely different from, I guess, what I learned, which was, they didn't actually teach us now, come to think of it. They were just like, here's some paint, go do stuff. For it. Yeah, basically.
Yeah. I was very much in the Squidward camp of being taught art. I was taught the rules of art.
Mm-hmm. No, they just did whatever for me. Yeah. Since we are past the 55-minute mark, Alex.
Yes.
Yeah, we're with editing, I would assume probably close to 55 minutes, but right now we are at 58 and a half minutes.
Ooh.
Ooh. So I have two final questions for you.
Alrighty.
Are you prepared?
I don't know. Let's find out.
So the first question, is there anything we haven't talked about yet that you would like to talk about?
How much time do we have?
I wouldn't say a huge amount. I can also invite you back for another episode.
That'd be awesome. That'd be...
Yeah, we can talk... We can break down SpongeBob. We can talk about sci-fi.
I will watch the other spicy episode where SpongeBob instigates a proletariat revolution.
Oh my god, what?
Oh, yeah! The episode Squid on Strike is wild. I wrote a first-year paper on it and got a 95% because...
Oh my god.
Quite literally, it's about Squidward and SpongeBob trying to instigate a revolution against their capitalist oppressor, Mr. Krabs. I am not joking. I sound okay. Like I am.
No, you can send that episode to me and I'll do homework.
Ooh, yes.
And we can discuss it. Oh my god, that's beautiful.
Yeah, like, when I say that, it sounds like I'm talking about, like subtext. That is not subtext. That is the text.
I'm afraid what the subtext is.
Well, as someone that isn't a political science major, I'm pretty sure...
I thought you were saying politician.
No, well, I mean, I have a heart, so no thanks.
wow.
No. I jest. The way the episode ends, I'm sure the episode is trying to say something. I'm sure they're trying to make a point. But yeah, actually, if I were to be invited back, I think it'd be really interesting to, like, talk even more about art and what it's for and what it's doing. Because that's really cool, and I like that. I've got a book right here, Robert Henri's The Art Spirit, and I had so many highlighted quotes, but we don't have time for that, so...
That is mildly frightening.
Mm-hmm. It's a really good book, though.
All right. I guess my second question for you would be, is there anything you'd like to say to any creators out there? So that might be people who want to start doing something, people who are doing something, maybe they have writer's block or they're afraid of starting something. Okay. What do you want to say?
I think my primary piece of advice, and I think this can be applied to any medium, because I've worked in a decent amount of mediums, even if I'm not like proficient in a ton of them, is
me as a musician.
Yeah. Me as a musician, having owned an instrument for like 2 weeks. but I've heard a lot of advice on a lot of different mediums. And I think the biggest takeaway from all of them is to really be well read in the medium that you're wanting to work in.
Mm.
One of my biggest pieces of writing advice has been from Ray Bradbury. He has suggested that the writer's routine is that every day before you go to bed, you read one short story, you read one poem, and like a classic poem that stood the test of time, although I'm sure you could read whatever you want, and one essay, one nonfiction essay on whatever topic you'd like. Do that every single day. By doing that, you're basically feeding your brain all of the good nutritious food that the writer's brain needs in order to produce good work. Same with visual arts. If you are wanting to be a visual artist in a particular style, really partake in that style and understand how it works. But also don't limit yourself to one style. Appreciate all styles and find out what each of them is saying in its own unique way. No style shaming. Yeah, don't style shame. Because every kind of artistic style and every artist has brought something unique to the field of art. And even with music, listen to a variety of different genres and really understand how they function. That's like listen. Really sit down and listen to the medium that you're working in. Because that way you'll hear what the artist is doing through their work. You'll hear that little spark of humanity inside their art.
Wow, like, that was a very deep piece of advice.
Well, I think it's an important piece of advice, so...
Yeah. So if that's the type of thing that tickles your fancy,
yes,
go ahead and read a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, be a nerd like me and unironically own a Norton reader and just read an essay every night before going to bed.
It's not a bad thing. Like, I would definitely agree. Like, if you're... I'm not as committed to you. Or, committed to you.
You're not committed to me? Man,
I'm
that
sorry,
hurts.
Alex. Hurts. I'm not as committed as you. Mm-hmm. In terms of consuming media, like, I wouldn't say I even consume media that often. I don't really have a lot of time to read books between my 5 million things and clubs.
That's fair.
But it definitely, the more you read into or watch or act, whatever your medium of choice, your genre of choice, the more you will improve. The more you look at things with an analytical mind, you will improve.
Yeah, that's true. And bringing it back to the passionate man who thinks he's too good for other people's opinions, that's where I think that kind of person falters.
Mm-hmm.
They are locking themselves off from the lineage of all of the incredible work that people have done over the years and all of the amazing ideas that they've put into their work. And I think to produce the best work that we possibly can, it's worth it to really internalize those ideas and really understand how your medium ticks and what makes it what it is.
Or even if you think about, for example, Alex and I are very different writers. Mm-hmm. We have very different writing styles, write for different genres. But even if, like, my advice to whatever Alex writes or vice versa won't necessarily always be applicable, it can still be helpful and give you a new point of view and help you improve your work.
100%. It, like, yeah, even advice that doesn't seem useful right now may be useful in the future. Like, one of the essays that I read from the Canadian author Robertson Davies, he said that he doesn't think it makes sense for kids to not be given pieces of writing to read that is, like, confusing. Like, he doesn't agree with the idea that we should only give people writing that immediately makes sense.
Hmm.
Because he believes that some of the best writing, or some of the best art, only really gains appreciation in your mind years down the road when you need it. Like, some of the most mind-boggling poems that he read when he was a kid, eventually came back to him 15, 20 years later, and then the meaning kind of came to him. And I think that's true with all of the art that we consume. I think being well-read and broadly reading is important like that, because you never know when that little short story that you read years ago might gain relevance in your life.
That's definitely an interesting, I wouldn't say necessarily everything is relevant, but mm-hmm. I would agree in the sense of there are a lot of pieces that helped me understand who I am today or helped me through hard times. So mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
Yeah. And yeah, like, I don't know if writing off a piece of work or like writing off a piece of art because it's not immediately relevant to my life right now, I don't know if that's the best way to look at it, because...
Well, also the point of reading is to find out new things.
Yeah. Yeah, like, if you're only seeking things that are going to be relevant right this very second, then you don't know what you're missing out on.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for a very poignant and deep advice, I guess.
You are very welcome. And right. I would thank you very much for inviting me onto the show. I had a lot of fun.
Well, thank you. I also had a lot of fun. That went fast.
Oh, I know. Like, it doesn't feel like an hour and 10 minutes just zipped by. Or an hour and...
You're having fun.
And an hour and insert how long this episode was edited down to here.
Well, right now it's an hour and almost 9 minutes. So I imagine it's probably going to be close to an hour with the things that we have to cut out.
Okay. And yeah, I would love to come back if
hell yeah.
You would like to invite me back, because this was a blast. To,
something we can do, if you let me take a bathroom break, we can take like a short break and then do another quick thing, like, or an hour long thing, depends. I have nothing else to do tonight, and talk about like all the other things you wanted to talk about. It's okay if you like, don't want to. Gotta read up.
I don't know. Like, maybe it would be good. Like, I 1,000,000% would want to do another episode. And if you wanted to do like a quick setup thing, like, I don't know what you had planned.
Had nothing planned.
Okay. Maybe it'd be good to just kind of have some time to let things incubate, and then
sure,
we can. You know, think about some new stuff to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You sound so serious. I promise you, it wasn't... I wasn't that worried about it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm like, maybe next time we could... Because, yeah, I'm having a blast talking about art and stuff, because I rarely get to talk about it.
Hell yeah. If you want, next time I can just give you, like, the reins and you can just go.
I could just pop
It's an off. Alex podcast.
The Alex podcast. well, it was nice to have someone to bounce ideas off of.
No problem. And now I'm going to give it a little pause and I'll say the outro.
All right.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. It's been fun.
We've had a blast.
Good chats.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And potentially there may be another episode.
That would be great.
Of you. I just realized I kind of implied that. There this may be the last.
We won't be able to top it. Just
no, Edward. Pull your head. This episode is too good. We're not doing any more episodes anymore. All right. This has been another episode of In the Margins. If you like the show, check us out at radiolaurier.com or at the Instagram page at In the Margins Podcast for more episodes. Thank you for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.